Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
You're the young master, Shinobi.
Yes.
What good are you? You were nowhere to be seen when things went south. Wait, tell me you didn't lead them here yourself. The timing of their attack was perfect. Normally those bandits wouldn't have stood a chance. Yes. Yes, it had to be you. I hope you die, traitor.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a burning, ruinous, ransacked, decrepit favorite.
It is a past favorite.
Yep, it is. Well, that's dark. Hopefully a current favorite as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I didn't mean it like that.
Yeah. Hopefully a future current favorite.
Yeah.
And in all the different multiverses.
Yeah, yeah.
Spider-Man, Far From Home.
Forever. Yeah, so this week we are talking about the Hirata Estates here in our season about Sekiro. I don't know why I feel why I felt the need to stipulate that.
Yeah, just letting you guys know what we're doing. As we mentioned last episode, this is next episode. We will have starter off week episodes for this. As is becoming a tradition, as we're figuring out how to cover Sekiro. The beginning is starting with administrative business.
Yes.
Next episode we have your responses. We've already recorded that.
Yeah.
So by the time you're hearing this, apologies, it is too late, but we will put out another call.
Yeah.
For them, kind of after the second, two thirds of the game or second third of the game.
Yeah.
And then we're also kind of treating this. We were talking about this in the green room. We're going to treat, this episode as kind of the last episode before the spoiler wall.
Right.
We're going to do that after you got to Rufio, in the, Ashina Castle. Mm-hmm. We're going to do that a little bit sooner. Just because we're realizing that the way that this game tells its stories, a lot of kind of past locations and characters have light shed on them based on future events.
Right, right.
And we want to be able to talk about those in total, including some stuff that's going to happen this episode. Because the game very intentionally, the first time you go to Hirata Estates, you do not know what's going on.
Right, right.
In it. So we'll talk about it, and then when we get to kind of the end, maybe we'll just put up a little warning in case you do happen to be playing along with the show. I imagine most people listening are further ahead, but in case you are, and then we'll kind of talk about like, hey, what actually happened here?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is it's worthwhile, and it's one of the very few sections in this game where you are doing the you're at a place where a disaster happened, kind of Soulsborne thing, which Sekiro has kind of differentiated itself by making. Things kind of a medias res.
Yeah.
For the most part. And this is actually a little bit more classic, like archaeology, even though it just happened.
Yes. It's just still ongoing. Like you're fighting the bandits and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So the early game is presented as a mystery. It's fun to play along with that for a little bit, but eventually we need to shed light as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Shed light and just, yeah. And so we're kind of treating that. So just be warned.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of near the end of this episode. In fact, like if you're still like, if you're literally playing along with the show, go beat Hirata Estates.
Yes.
And then come back. It'll probably be a better time. And then afterwards, once we get to the next episode, we're not going to be talking about like the endings and stuff, but we do want to be able to discuss like character motivations and stuff.
Yeah.
Part of it being that because there are so many bosses that seemingly don't have them.
Right.
When we come to bosses that do have them, we want to be able to like break them down.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the bosses end up being like kind of major characters that we know. You know, like there's a lot of intrigue happening in this and saying like, oh, they're attacking you for no reason. Well, that's just not true.
It's just not true. And even though it feels like that, or at least it felt like, I don't want to speak for anybody else. It felt like that the first time I came here.
Yeah.
Like I was just kind of like, okay, like I didn't even really, I assumed it was a memory, but I thought maybe it was the memory of the person who I got the bell from.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll talk about it.
Yep. Two other brief administrative things. First off, thanks again so much for your support. $5 is not nothing, and we're super happy to have you here. Second off, that also gets you access to a bunch of extra stuff. I want to call attention to Abject Suffering. We are approaching this month our 300th episode of that show.
We just did the milestone for that show. It comes out a lot.
So. Yeah.
but that is a fun comedy show. If you like the two of us making jokes,
yeah,
I think that you might like that show. At the very least, give it a shot.
Yeah. If you just want us to say the names of From Software games back and forth to each other, you might not like it.
Yeah. Even though there is a season of that.
Yes.
There is a full 40 episodes where we just go back and forth going Echo Knight.
Like Pokemon.
Echo Knight.
Chromehounds.
Chromehounds. I don't know why I think that's funny, but if the From Software games were Pokemon, I think it'd go a little something like this.
Look at me, I'm Dark Soul 3.
Yeah. it isn't related. But then the other thing, so After Suffering, real fun, and you get a lot of that at $5.
Yeah.
The other thing is you get a full premium episode of Watch Out for Fireballs. Previously, you know, it was a retro games podcast, which might not interest you if you are interested in the FromSoft games, but we started covering modern games, and we did a handful of stuff that people suggested we cover after we ran out of Soul stuff, including 4 episodes on The Witcher 3 and episodes on all the DLCs for that.
Mm-hmm.
That has some Souls DNA in it, and it was, you know, we cover that not quite as zoomed in, but still pretty zoomed in.
Yeah.
About that, and that's like a great game. Same like Symphony of the Night, we've done several Castlevanias, a few things, you know, Zelda, we did Breath of the Wild. Several things that have some Souls DNA in there. So check out those episodes.
Please do.
Yeah. So let's get into it. What did we do last time, Cole?
Well, last time we managed to defeat Gyobu the demon. Sorry. Gyobu! we managed to defeat Gyobu and breach the gates to Ashina Castle. However, we got something rattling around in our pocket. This old woman who seemed oddly familiar gave us a bell asking us to offer it to Buddha for her. And because that is the custom, you know, let's go and do that.
Yeah. And when we do this back at the sculptor's shack. And when we do so, we can teleport to the Harada Estates. Now, again, as we mentioned, if you're playing this game and not trying to tackle it area by area, you're probably meant to and probably have like dipped in and out of this instead of covering it all in one go.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I recommend. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna talk about it back to front.
Yeah, even just mechanically, you get very useful stuff here, along with like really good practice. Like I like this level a lot.
It's a really good level. Yeah. Like it's a very nice as far as like levels go. In terms like the wireframe of Sekiro is really good, kind of front to back. The as far as kind of theming though, this was such the first time I went here, such like a refreshing change of pace, just visually.
Yeah.
You know, at night and on fire, it's a really magical combination for any building, you know, and this, you know, it is just thatched roofs and paper walls and stuff. It's the same stuff we've been seeing, but just having this different aesthetic and a couple of different, you know, biomes to go through kind of different wildernesses and such that are part of this was really refreshing.
Yeah. Yeah.
In case we didn't explicitly state it, this is a memory.
Yeah, you're traveling back into the past, kind of.
Yep, you're gonna back to the future. Your own mom.
You're at least going to see the death of your own dad.
Yeah, Biff has sacked the village, and you have to stop him.
You bow at this Buddha, and you begin to pray, and you hear the sculptor, you know, a memory of the sculptor saying this, you know, the bell's chime will stir your thoughts and awaken old memories from their slumber.
Yes.
This is not explicitly 3 years ago. It's not like you're, you know, Steins Gating back into your old self because you still have your prosthetic.
Yes. And you can pull things in and out of it.
Yes.
So, you know, a couple of people have said like, oh, you know, what's the timey-wimey? What's the dreamy-weamy, you know, for this season? I think this is it. It's like memory-wemory because you can literally pull things into and out of.
Yeah.
Out of the memory.
Yeah. And I'm down for that specifically because it was so disorienting.
It's very disorienting.
Yeah. And also like when I first did this, I thought this was going to be more of a thing as well.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, I'm going to go to that. I had an intense sense that this was the hook of the game.
Yeah.
Because the way the game presented itself was very on the surface, you know, and it still kind of is for most of the game. And I thought, oh, I'm in the middle of this war. You know, between this dying, dying country, this Ashina, and this invading force, this like shogunate, and I'm gonna go back to different memories of how I influenced and was involved in this, and kind of see all the major players.
Yeah, like it was going to be like an ODST thing.
Yes, that's totally what I thought it was going to be, and it's not.
No,
there's one little minor little variation on this,
mm-hmm.
but it is, that's not what the game is.
No.
It does open a huge wide door for DLC.
Yep.
Like a DLC just has to be a bell.
Yep.
And then, bam, you could go to another period in the wolf's life,
mm-hmm.
And check that out. But yeah, it was, it's interesting that it's not very much of a thing. It's also something where like, I haven't read a compelling argument and don't want to read one,
mm-hmm.
about how this works. Like if you want to be just a step above hand waving it, you say it's like the shitty fucking key at the end of Bioshock Infinite, where like you just look down and it's like, oh, the flame vent was always there.
Yeah.
You know, and I just forgot about it. And you actually are just remembering things. And then you had this weird block,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you don't even remember what you're carrying.
Yeah.
Like, I'm loaded down with more candies than I thought. I thought I had Skittles left, but I have 13 Skittles, actually, because I went down to this memory, the Skittle memory. I'd rather just not worry about it. There's, like, uh-huh. shades of Bloodborne-esque, like, hey, just unfocus your eyes and experience the, you know, the what they're going for as far as a feeling, as opposed to trying to figure out the mechanics of this specific
time. Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, the time travel in media doesn't have to make logical sense. It just has to make emotional sense,
yeah.
You know?
And the more it tries to make logical sense, the worse it is.
Right.
Like, I love time travel and stuff, but it has to make, like, there's a weird just kind of plausible deniability. Like, it has to make a little bit of sense, just mm-hmm. so you don't go, well, that's dumb. You know, that's yeah. a paradox.
It can't just be no rules, but.
Yeah, exactly. It has to be some rules footy. Yeah.
And this is not the first time From has done this either. Like, you know, yes. remember traveling back in time to fight Artorias, you know, and to, yes. and to rescue Dusk. So yeah. it's not necessarily.
That was much more like time travel-y,
yes.
like traditional time travel, since it was you who had done it, you mm-hmm. know. So that was much more like twisty.
Yeah.
In a way, like you were the subject of these legends and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That felt more like a movie time travel plot. This feels more like, you know, again, like just the time travel part of it's, you know, a little bit more perfunctory.
It's like your eternal sunshining yourself more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
And this is an important night too, you know, throughout the game so far, there have been people who talked about that night. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be inclined to think, oh, they're talking about the beginning
late
of the game.
December, 1963. What a night.
that they would be talking about the night at the reservoir when your yeah. arm was cut off and stuff. No, this was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And you know, we're going to be here and we're going to learn quite a bit, even though the critical path of the game is going to obscure some of it. The question we're going to have answered at the end of this is, how did you get the resurrective power?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you know, a lot of questions and a lot of answers coming from this. So
yeah.
You start off on this overhead cliff. They do the From thing that I love, where there's something behind you.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn around again, that's like something that is always going to get me.
Yeah.
There's this great little because you can go here relatively soon. You can walk down this little cliff just kind of, you know, a little bit, you know, slower. But you can take a shortcut
mm-hmm.
to this just by jumping,
yeah.
Which I love because there's little grapple points to get down very quickly. And you're next to a river that has a bridge there with some people patrolling the bridge.
Yeah.
Before we go to the bridge, though, you should remember that you can swim in this game. Go to your right and get introduced to a really, you know, the equivalent of sparkly and shiny.
Yeah.
The crow for this game.
this incorporates the elements of a lot of stuff, too, because there's another one of these guys and they do not get along.
Yeah, exactly. This is the Pate and Creighton.
Mm-hmm.
of crates and potions. So the yeah.
But this guy, no, this is what's his name, Pot Noble
Harunaga.
Yeah, Pot Noble Harunaga. Mm-hmm. And I love his voice.
Yeah, this is great.
So there's a pot here, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, the lid is slightly askew, and there's this wiry golem hand just reaching out and like grasping around it furiously. And
yep.
he speaks to you almost like in this like Maurice LaMarche, you know, Mr. Freeze kind of thing. Please bring me carp.
Yep, it's Bran.
Yeah.
He's been put into a box. You may remember seeing these guys from like Final Fantasy.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember fighting things that look like this in JRPGs before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing. And he wants carp scales. Now, previous to this, you could have run into some of these.
Yeah.
Depending on when you came here. The way that this game kind of does crystal lizards is there are golden carp in the water, And they will run from you when they see you. If they run against the wall long enough, they'll disappear,
mm-hmm.
similar to a crystal lizard. And you kill them, you get a carp scale, and this is a secondary economy.
Right.
Where you can kind of trade these for items.
Think of it like trading awareness or insight for items at that particular fountain in Bloodborne. Right.
Yeah, it's like an insight merchant.
Yeah.
I didn't engage with this system for quite a while because I was so scared to be in the water.
Yep.
Because I thought I was like, oh, I'm going to be in the water. I'm going to be defenseless because I'm in the water.
Yeah.
Because that's how water works in games. And I'm at to fight. I saw, some of the non-golden,
mm-hmm.
Regular ass carp walking back and forth. And I was like, well, shit, like, I don't want to fight that, but it
especially
turns out
since it's walking, that's a feat for a fish.
Exactly. Yeah, that is feat for fish. it's walking around the surface of the thing. So it was like, yeah, okay, but it turns out you are just as capable on the surface of water.
Yeah.
If not more so. you just fight these and you just lock on and then just spam attack and they'll die.
Mm-hmm.
These evil fish, and you can actually go and harvest the good fish.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. So I just this was the moment when I was first playing the game that I realized I could swim. I think I just fell off the bridge by accident or something.
Yeah.
I totally Mr. Magoo'd myself into it. And when there wasn't an instant
Ninja Magoo.
Yeah, Ninja Magoo. When there wasn't an instant game over, I was like, huh.
Yeah.
And I was rewarded with this wonderful NPC. His goal
is also I was gonna bring that into it, but there's an interesting connection. So his goal is to become a carp,
mm-hmm.
Because carp keep growing and live a really long life. There are shades of Seath with that.
Oh,
he wants scales to become immortal,
mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting little connection. I don't know how intentional that is, because otherwise this character doesn't have very much in common with Seath.
Right.
But that's what, getting scales for immortality, that's what that reminded me of.
Yeah, yeah. And it plays into rebirth and being reborn, right? Because when a carp is ready to go, they just swim up a waterfall. Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bam, new carp. Yeah, then you got carp on your hands. So you can go around in this very beginning area. I think there are four carp in Harada Estates, mm-hmm. Four golden carp, but there are two of them right in this beginning area because they very much want you to trade for the two scale item that he sells,
mm-hmm.
Which is a withered red gourd.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thing that an item. There are a few of these consumables that recharge that are like Estus.
Yeah.
That you can get the game for different status effects. I actually think there's one for every status effect, except for a late game status effect, which we'll talk about. But it reduces burning buildup.
Mm-hmm.
And if you went to this guy first, you didn't know burning was a thing. It was mentioned, but you probably hadn't set yourself on fire yet. So yeah.
It's smart that they put this here. They also have an NPC, I believe, hand over or drop the dousing powder here.
Yeah.
You just find it as a pickup on the ground. I just love the idea that you like there is an item to fix being on fire.
Yeah, it's so common here.
That's kind of this area's status gimmick, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is you've got these bandits who are here to to pillage, right? And they're going to be attacking you with torches, and they're going to be shooting fire arrows at you and stuff, and flame kind of builds up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And including this first guy on the bridge, when you walk over to the bridge, who has a torch.
Yeah.
Who there, as we mentioned, which are really kind of interesting. Like, these are annoying weapons, because they will poise through things,
mm-hmm.
and they don't do very much damage on individual strikes, but getting set on fire, as a status effect slowly, drains vitality, which is a bummer. But the bigger thing is your posture will not recharge while you're on fire.
Yeah.
You cannot relax.
Nope.
So yeah.
Still gonna take a nap.
Yeah. This kind of plays into one thing I think that is, I find a little bit obnoxious in this game is that, during these kind of fights, like using a status ailment recovery makes tons of sense. During boss fights, I find it pretty annoying.
Yeah, oxygen to do it.
Yeah. There's just not, it's very hard to create spacing and create time.
Mm-hmm.
To do one of these things.
With all the tools that this game gives you, like in the boss arenas, a lot of those go out the window. And
it just
like mini bosses, kind of. Yeah, you like that. It's fine to step away, but
And some of them, like we talked about this with the headless, right? It's a bigger problem with terror and the headless for me, but just being like, I have these items to remove this status, but every time I turn my back on this headless to use it, he pulls my butthole out of my butt.
Right.
You know, and so that ends up bumming me out. So like, I wish he just had a quicker animation.
please don't say bummed out after you talk about your butthole being torn out.
I know what I did. But at the very least, I wish these had quicker animations or something. Like these should be like blood vials.
Yeah.
You know, they're not super slow, but they take a little bit longer than I would like.
Yeah. So, and then also I'm a big old dummy who just kind of like just breezes past them when I'm trying to find them in my quick bar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That can be a thing. One of the high level, it's a little bit annoying, like inventory tax, but a strategy I came upon is only having the things in my hot bar that I needed for that.
Yeah. Then, yeah.
And that's it's very tempting just to have like, well, you never know when you're going to need a shard. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You have a pause. It's fine. Yeah. No, I just
want to get it. You're not used to having a pause.
Yeah.
You know? So like, if you didn't have a pause, you want to have anything you might need down there.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk more about this guy's storyline, when this continues. For now, we're going to go back. He sells a couple of noteworthy items that are worth talking about.
Yeah.
Quick.
So that Wither Red Gourd is a huge one, right? And you get some stuff that, one thing in particular is that's not going to pay off until you find this guy's counterpart, this mask fragment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is really interesting. We'll talk about that later because it is an interesting item I wish that I could have gotten earlier in the game.
Yeah.
Like, it ends up being an end game thing, which really, to me, encourages grinding with it, and I really wish that was not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting from a lore perspective, even though I didn't really use it, is a skill called Floating Passage,
right?
They send you, and the interesting thing about this, so this was taught it was brought to Ashina by an outsider, and it's considered heretical, but the master of the technique is Tomoe.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to be end up being a big kind of name that hovers over this whole game starting in the next proper episode.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Genitro uses this too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And learned it from Tomoe.
Yeah.
So, and we'll figure out who that is. And everyone is saying Tomoe is going to be the DLC, like big bad.
Cool.
Or have you. So definitely could be the case.
Nice.
But yeah, this is the first hint you're likely to get of that character.
What so. A pocket do.
He's been laying in the kitchen window,
uh-huh.
and he knocks something off the sink. Do not know what.
Hmm.
Yep. You got something rattling around in your pocket. Call back to the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this guy a little bit later.
Yeah. So this bridge, not too terribly difficult. This is where you fight the torch guys proper. They can sic their dogs on you if you go too far. So it's nice it's probably best practice to lure the more aggressive humans out. But dogs, you know, just shuriken them. You're fine.
Yep. We talked about those guys.
Yeah. Gary, why do these bandits have hot dog skin like Hulk Hogan?
I think that they're just real tan.
Mm.
I think they have hot dog skin the same reason why Hulk Hogan does.
Okay.
Brother. that's my guess.
Okay.
I just thought that they were meant to look like, weathered and gross.
Yeah.
You know? You make your way up to this gate, here, and, very generously, there's a shrine right over the gate as soon as you grapple over.
An idol.
And you're kind of. An idol, thank you. And then you're just kind of in this open area here, which is kind of great. You can't quite go forward because we're going to open up a shortcut.
Right.
But you can go right, and it looks like a village. You know, one of the things I like in From Software games is where they show you where people live.
Right.
Like, it looks like a space that people could live in.
Mm-hmm.
And this does.
Yeah. I love the layout of this level because, it does. It looks like a castle city. You've got these courtyards that are separate from each other, right? And they serve kind of different purposes. And they are just kind of leaves off of the stem of this main path that you're going to go up and down. And each of these courtyards kind of ends up, most of them anyway, end up being fun little stealth playgrounds, right?
Yeah. This first one specifically.
Yeah.
You know, you're going in and out of this ruined building with paper walls. There are a few ambushes in there as well. But if you're careful, you can stealth this whole group.
Yeah.
People kind of cover one another. You can also do the thing that I like to do because You know, if you're not trying to stealth everybody, there's two people there, do a jump attack on one of them. Right. And then they just get to see you fall from the sky and slit the throat of their buddy. And then you kind of
establishes dominance.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then he, you know, they back up a couple steps, they pull out their sword. It's pretty great. Mm-hmm. And then this moves into another kind of big courtyard that is, seems designed to discourage stealth.
Right, right. Got dogs. There's
dogs, a rooftop lookout with a flaming bow and arrow, just kind of a lot of people covering one another.
Yeah. This ended up being really tough my first go through.
Yeah.
Because I was not meeting this courtyard on its terms. I was trying to stealth as opposed to pressing aggressively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. Even though like if you know, the first time I was here, because it was still very difficult for me, to kind of fight these guys, is I would, you know, get in, get my, you know, try to take out the lookout, which you can usually do. And then other people would see you, but then I would just go and hide for a moment.
Right.
You know, so I kind of took this in that kind of rhythm. Yeah. I still don't like jumping down here and fighting all these things at once.
No.
I haven't made a breakthrough or anything where I like fighting a crowd in this game. I know that you're given tools and skills that do area control. But one of the things I was thinking about with those skills, because I was thinking about Floating Passage, like I never bought that before. Mm-hmm. And I bought it to check it out before we recorded this episode, is that like some of these things have poise, mm-hmm. you know, so you don't actually get interrupted, but you always take hits during them.
Yeah.
Like, and you take so much damage in this game, at least early on when your health is so low, mm-hmm. that like just tanking those hits never felt like an option.
Right.
To me, like this felt very much like a, you know, so using some of these crowd control tools or skills in groups of big people, like if two of them slash while I'm killing the third one, mm-hmm. that's so significant.
Yeah.
You know, that just never ended up feeling worth it, which is what ended up being like, well, I only use a couple different tools and I just end up using Ichimonji.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah. Ichimonji is the key that unlocks people's skulls.
It is the it's the brain. It's the key that gets brains out of skull jail. the big kind of factor here, other than this is also a place, and a couple of people pointed this out online where I read, and I didn't do it until later when I was, you know, literally grinding. Mm-hmm. Is this is a great place to grind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If you're going to do that, you go around, you kill everybody in this little courtyard, you then activate your wealth balloon, and then pick up all their stuff, mm-hmm. and you end up with a lot of money.
Yeah.
So when I was grinding specifically to go grab that mask fragment, ended up doing that.
Yeah.
So, there's a couple of people sitting around a fire.
Yeah.
Here.
Yep. They're sitting around a fire. You end up killing them because, you know, even they're angry that you interrupt their drink. And this fire, it has a loot icon in it, which is one thing that makes me happy. This game has loot icons, because I never would have checked it before. This fire, it's not a fire built naturally. This is the result of a tool that they found called the flame barrel, which you can mm-hmm. pick up and take to the sculptor and he will install it on your prosthetic.
Yeah.
It gives you a short range kind of belch of flamethrower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, this is interesting. Red-eyed enemies are the ones that are very susceptible to this,
right?
Including that ogre.
Yeah, part of what makes me, what makes it obvious that this area is supposed to be tackled in concert with the Ashina outskirts is the fact that they give you that ogre and they say, oh, you need a way to set him on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It takes a while to set things on fire.
No.
Generally, you know, oil helps. You mentioned that lowers their resistance to that. But the way fire works in this on an enemy is the same way it works on you. There's a meter. You just don't get to see it.
Right.
So there's kind of like a trial and error aspect to seeing what enemies can be set on fire. Like when I and in life.
Yeah.
You know, in general, when I was playing through the game, I tried this on a few things I was having difficulty with and just like it wasn't happening quick enough.
Mm hmm.
You know, for it to be worth it. But I've seen some strategies online and stuff. Like, apparently, this is very useful for some of the bosses later in the game, even some of which I struggled with. I just couldn't get them to set on fire quick enough.
Right.
You know, and again, that way that, like, using a tool, you know, finding the proper finding an opening for a strike is really easy. Finding an opening for a tool takes a little longer, and you're likely to take a hit.
Yeah.
You know? But this, you know, this is cool. I didn't get tons of use out of it, honestly, mm-hmm. Throughout my time. We might end up doing, either when we talk about, the guide or doing an off week episode and kind of talk about the upgrades to the tools and like edge cases and stuff, because I know they exist.
Yeah.
It just for myself, and I've also read this elsewhere, so it's not just me. They may as well not for like quite a few people.
Yeah. Not very discoverable, those kind of synergies or weaknesses, right?
Discoverable, or just the, you know, to upgrade them to be good, you know, like you have to put a lot of resources and kind of time into them.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to like this. And one of the things that this game does that I really kind of drives me nuts is that on any skill tree, they obscure the end entries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we talked about this, but I hate it when games do that. Because it'd be much more fun if I could be excited to build towards something than getting a surprise. Like, what's the point of having a surprise skill? Like, oh, you know, it's a specific combat maneuver.
Let me plan at that.
Let me look at that and like kind of salivate over it.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're looking at your prosthetic upgrades, it doesn't anything a prosthetic you don't have yet, which you're going to be getting these pretty late into the game.
Yeah.
Block passage. So you can't upgrade through them. And then late game, you know, later prosthetics, you can't see what they are. So like if I'm underwhelmed by the flame barrel, there's nothing to suggest that someday the flame barrel will be cool to me.
Yeah.
And that's a disappointment.
Yeah, I don't see what obscuring those gets you aside from, you know, gotcha moments, right?
Yeah. Yeah, gotcha moments and just kind of getting you to diversify your skill set. And in a game about at least a very little bit about when it comes to materials and skill points, privation, right? Like you don't have enough. You're not going to max out all your skill trees in this game. It's not one of those games. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to end the game naturally with enough stuff to upgrade all of your items.
Right.
Why do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it adds a thing.
Right.
I found that mildly frustrating. It didn't actually impact my experience that much, but it did mean that I didn't experiment.
Yeah,
very much.
I'd rather not be discouraged from engaging with the system.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Encourage me to engage with your systems. And there's a lot of little things like that. That's the big argument for having spirit emblems replenish on rest, right?
Yeah.
Just having those be natural is because, like, oh, I'd feel free to experiment with these tools if it wasn't a sunk cost every single time I tapped the R2 button.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yep.
Yeah. After we get this, there is the stairway path that goes back to this main hallway there. The main hallway we haven't seen yet is perpendicular to the first hall when we came in.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of goes up to that, and there is a samurai dying. There's another NPC dying outside the bridge as well.
Yeah.
And people are kind of telling us different things. The one on the bridge talks about the bandit attack itself.
Yeah.
The grand totality of what we're going to get from these characters is a couple little like tantalizing things about this attack.
Right.
One is that it was perfectly timed, like suspiciously timed.
Yeah. Like if this was just bandits, it would not be as well organized. There has to have been some kind of intel on when the estate would be vulnerable, let alone when Kuro would be here.
And when you'd be gone.
Yes.
Like you coming to this after it's done is terrible. Mm-hmm. Like that was disastrous.
Yes.
And also part of the plan,
mm-hmm.
as we'll find out.
Yeah. So it is pretty specific. Additionally, like a lot of the dialogue or eavesdrops, we're going to be getting useful mechanical information, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this guy's dying and he says, hey, go get this shinobi axe from a nearby temple and split their skulls wide open, please, which I appreciate the courtesy.
Exactly. You're welcome. Smash. You're welcome. Smash. You're welcome. So we can head left from here. And go back and unlock the gate to get a little bit of a shortcut. We can bypass those two courtyards.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of different little side paths off of this. There's one where where that axe is. You know, there's some bandits demanding that this door to this courtyard be opened on there. And you can take these guys out. You can also bypass them and go into that courtyard. They haven't made access to this yet.
Right. Yeah. Inside, this is where you can hear a wounded samurai being tended to. You get warned about the shinobi hunter.
Yeah. Not any real useful information
on
how to deal with that motherfucker. But the we know he's coming.
Right.
So, yeah. There's also a little coop, like a rooster coop.
Yes.
Which is great and terrifying. Like, we keep all of our monster roosters here. Each one can feed a village. It's like a chicken breast the size of a large pizza.
I just love that it is just a full courtyard of these chickens.
Yep. Just hanging out. Love
Look at all those ducks. Yeah.
Yep.
Very, very, very funny. This is there's a window where a man will blame you for the attack as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when you start feeling like, okay, I wasn't here.
Yeah.
Like I fucked up. Somebody, a woman gives you, says, you know, the bandits are after Lord Kuro. Oh, no shit. Yeah. And gives you, some antidote powder. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we do fight a poison boss up here, but this area is full of giving you one-off status items against an enemy you're going to fight a bunch of times that does the status a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Which is pretty frustrating. Like, it's, antidote powder is not very useful in this game.
It's like going to the water park, and when you get out the end of the water slide, somebody hands you a napkin and says, here's for drying off.
Yeah, or before you go in the water slide. Right. Again, you know, and it's like, well, I can dry off when I first touch the water slide, but I got a whole slide ahead of me, brother. Yeah. The axe, which we're going to go get to, is at a small shrine, and we can overhear the bandits talking about it. And they're just like, you know, do we, should we take this axe? Should we burn this temple?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of them says, you idiot, like, we don't take things from Buddha.
Right.
You know,
not even for Lord Juzo. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's
Lord Juzo who we're running to.
It's a real Lenny and George kind of situation.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So they're not going to do it. But then that doesn't stop you from coming down and slitting their throats.
Right.
And taking the monkey axe, which was offered to the Buddha. Here, Buddha, hope you like axes.
Yeah.
What do you get for the god who has everything? An axe.
Yeah.
So this gives you the loaded axe prosthetic.
Right. Useful.
It's very – so this does – the whole thing with the loaded axe is that it does a lot of posture damage. Very slow wind up, but does big posture damage.
Yes.
Out of things. And specifically, it is a key for a certain kind of lock we're going to run into. So you're incentivized to go back and turn this into a tool,
mm-hmm.
You know, before you continue, on this path. And I end up getting a decent amount of use out of this.
Yeah.
Like if you get behind an enemy, you can hit them with this, has that long wind up. But if you have a really wide window,
mm-hmm.
Specifically, there's a mini boss. I use this on a lot.
Yeah.
That is, you cannot damage through vitality
mm-hmm.
and I needed to do high posture damage to him.
Yeah. Real satisfying to use too. I love the animation for it. That wind up.
The animation's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Specifically, it is used for shields.
Yeah.
It will one-shot dudes with shields or those little – the rats that Tengu was having us hunt.
Oh, yeah.
That have the wooden hats.
Mm-hmm.
This will shatter those as well.
Nice.
So pretty nice.
Hmm. Yep. One final courtyard here that's kind of in this first third of the level or so. You meet a familiar face. It is Aniyama the Peddler. He's not a peddler yet. He's still a bandit. Yep. This is why he recognizes you and asks you, hey, do you remember that night? He says, hey, horn in on somebody else's territory. You know, this house is mine. And he says, mm-hmm. oh, I saw this great looking pagoda up on a cliff, though. It might have something good in it.
And it sort of does. But boy, oh, boy, it's well guarded. He also interesting, you know, in argument that this is actual time travel. If you kill him here, he does not appear in the future.
Ooh.
You can kill him here and ruin that merchant for yourself. And if you just attack him without kill him, he'll have extra dialogue for you.
Yeah.
He mentions it, which is kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, you're a bandit. Like, I don't know.
Aniyama's great.
Yeah. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
And that pagoda is something we'll talk about. And boy, oh boy.
As mm-hmm. you mentioned.
There's also behind that, there's a little hidden path that goes to a bundled Jizo statue. Which brings back a resurrection node.
Yeah.
When you use it, this is like a weird last ditch. Like, I'm so close to beating this boss.
Mm-hmm.
Just let me fucking have this. I'm going to run to the other side of the arena and pop the statue.
Yeah.
Kind of item.
Rare.
So, yeah, super rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we continue across. There's a bridge there. And there are – wait, you can go off this bridge and kind of make inroads in other ways as well. You know, getting used to that is still takes a little while.
Yeah. This isn't, oh yeah. Yeah. So over by the, Jizo statue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The main path will lead up this, the stairway, mm-hmm. up toward this grotto where the shinobi hunter is. This kind of narrow stairway is guarded by two shielded enemies, which will give you fits if you don't have that axe.
Yep. And this arena, so this is, you know, I'm going to camp out here on Shinobi Hunter Enshin of Misen for a little while because I spent a long time with this dude.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so, you know, a bunch of people are like, oh, that guy's easy. You know,
yeah. This game's find your weaknesses.
Yeah, whatever, friend. This guy was my Vietnam. Like, I, you know, and the reason why is it's I think that I would not have had nearly as hard a time if not for the arena.
No.
I was super vocal about complaining about this on Twitter because I thought the whole game was going to be a mini boss surrounded by ads.
Yeah.
Because it has been so far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the second general after the ogre, this guy, the next mini boss, the first mini boss you can run into in Ashina Castle, all that.
Yeah.
They back off of it. And it just blows my mind that they decided that the beginning of the game is the time to have these really tedious mini boss arenas.
Yeah.
You know, because so this one, you have those two shield guys you have to run up to. Not a big deal. You can run past them. They won't really aggro when you're in the arena. The arena itself, which is this long, pretty well-designed little area, actually.
I like it a lot.
I like it a lot, too. Like, it's really cool. The right is this this couple levels of cliffside. The left are these flowers you can hide in. There is a large pagoda you can get up to the top of by grappling up to a tree branch.
Mm-hmm.
All good.
Yeah.
Near the flowers, there's an archer. We shoot fire arrows, which is pretty much mandatory to take out.
Yeah.
And then there are two guys who will very likely aggro you who are over on the cliff.
Yeah, they're over on like one of these little terrace gardens against the right, just kind of talking. And this is a little bit where the stealth kind of falls down just because of universal aggro almost.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, you want to prioritize, right? And using these flowers and these flower beds, you can get a first strike on pretty much any of the actors in this, you know, like you want to prioritize the archer because he can harry you from everywhere. He can stop you from being able to, you know, make a retreat up to the top of the pagoda, not stop you, but make that less viable. You can go and get a first strike on the two samurai guys, and you can get a stealth shot in on Enshin himself. Right.
Yes.
Because he's just kind of doing his own little patrol. Any of those will blow you up. Will light you up and kind of start the fight. So my opening gambit is kind of always to get the to get the sneak attack in on Enshin, and then while he is recovering, go and deal with the archer and separate the crowd by going up to the pagoda and waiting for them to go back on their patrol.
That wait is what ended up driving me mad.
Yeah, because
like I would take
Like Enshin himself is, you know, extremely easy after that.
No, I think this boss is pretty hard, right? Yeah. Like anyone, a golden rule for this game is anyone with a spear is super high risk, high reward.
Yeah,
because you can do that Makiri counter, which is great. You know, you pull that off, wonderful. If you miss though, spear it's like, have these guys ever seen a spear before? Have these guys ever played D&D? Like, spears are, it's 1d6 damage, friends. Yeah. Like, it is not, you know, we're not talking about a big two-handed sword. But spears just wreck shop in this game. Have you guys ever played Dark Souls? Like, spears are not that powerful. But here, for some reason, they hit harder than anything in this game. So, like, you know, going down, taking out the archer, depending on how patient I was feeling, going and taking out those other dudes. And then just that weight for people to de-aggro, or like waiting for the shinobi hunter to de-aggro so I can get this if I miss the stealth kill, if you notice me kill the archer. And then just hanging out on top of the pagoda, just hanging there waiting,
make sure on the other side of it.
whistling Dixie, just waiting for him to de-aggro so I can then go down there and fight. He's a very problematic character. He wasn't here during the attack.
Oh, true. Yeah.
He wasn't here because he was racing the General Lee all across the fields of Japan.
Yeah.
And there's I'll get that shinobi boy.
Yeah. you stop at the principality line. Yeah. So stomp on your decorative mask.
Yeah. and then when you fight the shinobi, like, you know, I feel like if you know what to do, this guy is not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
He does the stab, which I was still getting used to the Makiri counter.
Right.
Right. It was also still when I was under the impression that I was following the instructions, the tutorial, which just says to dodge and press circle, not dodge in.
Yeah.
So half the time it was working, half the time it wasn't, and I couldn't figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much that, like, it was hard. You know, I was like, it didn't take that many tries to figure those parts out, and then I just had to execute. Like, getting the strategy did not take that long, but doing the run up to this guy and clearing out the ads did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like pulling my hair out.
Yeah.
I was furious about this.
Yeah.
Like, You know, and he just hits real hard. Hits real hard. He can knock you out of the air with his spear, which does tons of damage, because whenever you're in the air, you take extra damage.
Yeah.
He has his spear thrust, and he does one from a distance where he kind of runs it at you. And it is hard to know when you are supposed to Mercury counter that.
Yeah.
Because you do it as soon as you see the symbol, but it seems like he's too far away. Mm-hmm. And if you wait until the spear is in range, you'll get hit. You do it when he's far away, and then you will take a couple steps up and then do the counter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
boy, oh boy.
I don't think I had as much trouble with him as you did, based on what you're saying and based on how you were reacting to it on Twitter. It was a wall, though, and I kind of hit this. I was simultaneously a little bit stuck on the ogre and stuck on this at the same time. The ogre cracked first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even the general behind the ogre cracked. It was only after I reached Gyobo, and was kind of stymied, really intimidated by that more than anything, that I decided to put as much time into this as I did into the Shinobi Hunter. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really an odd, you know, it kind of speaks to Harada Estates being in a weird spot, because mm-hmm. I think this guy is much harder than the general. After the ogre, I think the next mini boss is harder as well.
Yeah.
This boss is harder than Gyobo, mm-hmm. the boss of this area, but you can get access to it well beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, so it is just we have a listener response coming up when we do the listener responses next week, where someone talks about how there's some kind of crucial signaling about that missing, because we don't know damage numbers.
Yes.
Like if this was like Dark Souls 1, we'd know that we were not doing very much damage to these enemies comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to tell.
Yeah. And you might be tempted, you know, to look at this and say, yeah, this is a real wall. Like, maybe this is a late game area and I'm just not supposed to be here. You mm-hmm. know, think, what's it, Unseen City, the first time that you go when you're carried by the Bagmen, right? You mm-hmm. think, all right, they're like, no, maybe not necessarily for now. Maybe I'll come back later. Like in Bloodborne, things will get difficult if you wait.
Yeah. There are day cycles that will make this more difficult.
Right.
I still think it is, like, there's probably a sweet spot
mm-hmm.
where it's, you know, before the day cycle, but after you've gotten that attack power increase. Like,
yeah.
doing this after Gyobo, which is why I did my second playthrough, and I just kind of didn't get the tools
mm-hmm.
that came from here. I just ignored them, did Gyobo, then came here. It was much easier.
Yeah.
You know, with that increase. But if I went here the first time with my base stats,
yeah.
which is what I did, this was just very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
He's a cool design. Like, he looks cool.
Oh, he looks like a priest. He's like a monk.
Yeah. He looks great. But everyone in a spear with this game, I find hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though I know you can do that counter, it's just they hit so hard and it's harder to track that movement.
Yeah. Even the non-perilous attacks, the ones that you can't make carry against. Mm-hmm. those are hard to track. I find it difficult to deflect, you know, just because of the length of the sword, you know, tripping out the animation a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he's doing different things with his arms that you're not used to. You know, you're used to watching that blade, but if you're watching the spear, like, it's coming in from different angles
mm-hmm.
and stuff. Like, spears are just like, it's nasty in this.
It's a hard hill to hike.
No. Until you get a spear, and then it's garbage.
of course.
When the enemy has a spear, it's extremely tough.
Yeah.
You know? Mine does 1% damage to enemies. This one does 60% to me. So
this cool. toy isn't fun anymore. You take it.
Yeah, exactly. Aw. You know? But eventually I got him. I did feel great when I got him, because I was so mad at him. So that was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you get a prayer bead for your trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that after the second general, you have enough, if you've been following along with this, with the show, you have enough now to get your first major stat up on your, on your vitality.
Definitely. You have Ogre General, the one in the attic after the Tengu.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have it before that. You'd mm-hmm. have it from the three from before the general,
mm-hmm.
just through bosses. And then this one. So this gives you your major stat up. And those are really significant, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I sat down, I did the thing where I, like, put my finger up against the my life bar.
Yeah.
And then when the menu just because I want to see what kind of percentage, like, how much it added to it.
Yeah.
I'm expecting it to be, like, 1% growth, you know, be very conservative. Right. But it's actually pretty decent.
Yeah.
It's generous.
Yeah, it makes a difference. So it will let you soak 3/4 of another hit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, almost an entire other hit,
yeah.
which is cool. So afterwards, there's an idol. We're in this kind of bamboo thicket. this like a fish hook shaped thicket path with these archers. You can follow this path, but they really want you to jump off to the side.
Yes.
There's just a couple guys are walking down the path towards you, and there's this like very convenient little like parallel path to the left.
Yep. Which lets you get a couple of good, it lets you be a predator in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Which is fun to pick these guys off, as you head up. There's quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
In general, you know, kind of a real standard mix up, like a dude with a sword covered by a guy or two with arrows.
Yeah.
You know, until you eventually get to this, this path that goes to the estate itself on this bridge. And there is an ogre, another one of those big guys with the, saggy guts.
Also, a notably saggy butt. I don't know if this guy has a different design. This guy, he cannot sneak because the butts, the butt cheeks slapping together.
It's almost like he's not dummy. It's like he was dummy thick, and then somebody lets some of the air out of him.
he's been working on it, but he wants to keep the weight off for long enough before he gets the skin reduction surgery.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
All these dudes need the skin reduction surgery.
Yeah. Good for them, though.
For sure.
Good for them.
Yeah. Good for them. The shinobi skin reduction surgery.
you have to book with Emma like months in advance.
Yeah. She's so busy.
But he's got this big old club, not too terribly different than the other fights, and he's got two shield friends with him that kind of complicate it.
The first half of my first playthrough of this, I never fought these dudes head to head.
No,
I always just like snuck up on them, and even now that I can fight them head to head, it does take a little while. They can be long fights. This moveset is not my favorite. My favorite is the dude with the bell. The version of this that's my favorite moveset to fight against, but
something about an enemy with a big old bell,
I think it's cool. Yeah. It looks neat. Yeah. Once you actually get past this gate, here's an old frenemy.
Yeah.
It's Papa.
Yeah, it's Papa, and Papa's not feeling good.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Daddy has a hangover. It's Owl. He's lying against a rock and he's dying.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm afraid I made a blunder. It seems the years have caught up to me.
Yeah.
And you know, he's sitting, you know, when we say this courtyard is on fire, it's not just a little on fire. This is like a full on backdraft fireproof blaze happening.
It's very on fire.
Yes.
As far as degrees, in both senses.
Yeah.
So he kind of gives this death speech, you know, and now it's up to you. Like, remember the Iron Code, like you have to save Lord Kuro, save him at any cost.
Right.
Here's the key to his panic room.
Yeah.
Like essentially.
Yes, this hidden temple that's at the back of the estate, you're not going to be able to get there because, as you can see, you know, this fire will immolate you if you try the front door. However, there is a secret way through that he gives you terrible directions for.
Yeah, exactly. He says, you actually mention it, and he goes, yes. Like, you're like, perhaps the cliffside. and he goes, yes, that'll work. And it's like, oh, okay.
So dummy me. I think, okay, well, I go back to the beginning of the level and look for a path that I just didn't notice before. No, you just kind of have to grapple up from out of this courtyard after the flames close it off. That's the way forward. You don't actually have to do any backtracking at all.
It's immediately to the left.
Right.
Of where you go. And you do this, like, once you go, you do this little jump from like little temple to temple, or little shrine to shrine. Which is like, what are these guys doing here?
Yeah.
Like, who's going to these shrines and lighting these candles like that do not have stairs or ladders to them? Like, it looks cool, but I don't know what these things are doing.
Yeah.
As you head there, there's actually, you can go into the river and you can find that three-story pagoda.
Yeah. Yeah. After a little tutorial about doing like double wall jumps. So you kind of Sam Fisher your way or Prince of Persia your way up this cave wall, to get to the pagoda. But it is not, let's say, empty.
Yes. This double jump thing too, real quick, you barely use this in the game. It's really weird. Right. It happens, happens like twice,
right.
You know, twice or three times. There is this purple ninja.
Yeah.
Who's there, who is a, you know, like almost like a Black Knight kind of style, mini boss almost unto himself. He doesn't have a health bar. He doesn't give you a good reward, but he's almost like a mini boss.
Yeah. In terms of difficulty, I had to cheese this guy. Or, you know, this person, I can't identify with if it's a dude or a lady. I could not take this on in a square fight.
I couldn't definitely the first time I was here. You can, the way to cheese it. So you can either run up and grab the item and get the hell out of here. Or you can run up aggro him, hide, and then wait for him to go back to patrol and then backstab him.
Yeah.
This guy is interesting. The fact that he's here is significant.
Extremely.
This is foreshadowing.
This is some good ass Dark Souls enemy, like storytelling through enemy placement.
Yep.
Because, you know, we're before the spoiler wall right now. The proper name for this enemy is going to give you a hint of what's actually going on here.
Yeah. So if you are playing along with the show, haven't gotten past a couple of the big moments, maybe fast forward 15, 30 seconds.
Yeah. It's from the Interior Ministry.
Yeah. So this is the Shogunate, who are the people who are fighting Ashina in the future, are here as well.
Yeah. They're softening it up.
What are these guys doing?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't really talk about it. I mean, I suppose it's worth mentioning what Harada is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Harada are an ally house.
Yes.
To Ashina at this point. And it's where Kuro comes from.
Mm-hmm. It's his ancestral home. Yeah.
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 So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So fight this guy or not, regardless of which, you get an item in here, a shinobi tool, making this very tool rich, this whole area.
Mm-hmm.
The Mist Raven Feathers.
Yes.
Which I cannot effectively use for the life of me.
It seems like something that would be incredibly overpowered if I knew how to use it.
Yeah. I've watched some videos on it. I see that there are cool techniques you can do with it. Essentially, you use this instead of blocking.
Yeah.
And then when you are hit, you block and then you can teleport.
Right. And you can control the direction of the teleport.
Yeah. You teleport behind enemies, generally what you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you don't press any direction, you teleport straight up. You can get some attacks that way.
Yeah.
It feels very versatile.
Yeah.
Getting used to pressing a different button to deflect. Are you kidding me? I guess, you know, I don't know. My muscle memory is, you know, I had to tear down a castle of muscle memory and build a new one for this whole thing.
And now you want me to build an annex?
Yeah, I'm not going to build the muscle memory annex for you, Mr. Raven Feathers. I might fuck around with it, you know, again.
It seems like it'd be rewarding. Yeah.
Yeah. If we do our Shinobi Tools off week episode, maybe I'll, you know, spend some time just like, hey, I'm going to run through a section of the game I know only using this tool and trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And see if I can get it upgraded and see what it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reports online do make it seem like it is effective, but I have a really hard time using it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I love the description for this, too, because it, you know, refers to this mythical beast, you know, that this is derived from, saying, you know, it is, you know, when you reach for the Mist Raven, all you pull back is feathers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is a cool, you know, very cool from a flavor perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you take the actual path, when you solve the directions that Al gives you, you know, you find your way to this camp that is at the base of this cave, where you have a couple of guards that are talking about the order, saying, yeah, well, the fire is pretty much going to take care of this itself already, but we're still posted up here at the bottom of this well, saying, hey, don't let a single rat escape Lord Juzo's orders. They're not talking about the people, you know, from Harada Estate. They're pretty much dealt with. They're talking about deserters. But you can chain your wall jumps to get up this well after you deal with these guys to get into the main hall of the estate itself. Again, very much on fire.
Yep, very much on fire. And this is a pretty tricky little stealth or combat hallway here. Mm-hmm. You can ignore, you know, all this stuff if you want to. Doing so, there's like some treasure in here that's worth grabbing.
Yeah.
You know, so I prefer not to ignore it. But this is a lot of enemies in this kind of linear I-shaped path with a building on the right that is on fire and a lake to the left that leads forward.
Yes. So the building, you know, you've got a lot of paper walls that you can hide behind and get around useful items in there. Things that you probably have run out of, like there are pellets that avail
candy
themselves.
Candy and balloons. And pellets. Yeah. Candy and balloons mostly, but also
supplies. All the looted stuff that you could get for tickets at the arcade.
Yeah. It's all a party central broke down, like exploded. And the ninja went, nice.
Mustache combs, sign me up.
Yep.
Ishin will love this.
Lost her harmonica. So
yeah. the way to get past this, especially if you're kind of making boss runs on Juzo, which I did a handful of times, several times, is to grapple up to the roof and just kind of stay as high up as possible. Down on the ground, kind of in the main path, you have these overlapping patrols of enemies who are pretty aggressive about spotting you.
Yeah. Pretty nasty. Mm-hmm. At this point, the first time through, I ended up actually bailing on this encounter and just moving forward,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to doing it.
Yeah.
And then it introduces us to our second mini boss of this episode, in his arena.
Yeah.
So we can see him standing there. He's posted up, like he is guarding.
Yeah.
And he's flanked by dudes. In the water, there is the single time, solitary time in this game, they give you a summon.
Getting your hopes up that this might be a thing.
This might be a thing. It is definitely not. I do not understand why. I've read a couple of people who have written about how kind of like how Harada States has a bunch of kind of one-off mechanics,
mm-hmm.
and said that this is probably the first area of the game they designed.
Oh, yeah.
Like maybe this is like, you know, is their painted world or what have you.
Yeah.
I like that this dude there here. It didn't make the boss that easy.
Yeah.
I would be down for more of these in the game. But
yeah.
One of the things I don't know, you know, when we get to the specific bosses and stuff, there's a couple, like when I was first bouncing off the end boss, I sat down and I was like, okay, I'm going to think of some ways that I think that you could allow for that variable difficulty in this game without betraying its spirit, right? Like without betraying the fiction. And there's a bunch of them I thought of, but this is the number one
mm-hmm.
is just have, like, they don't have to be ghosts or anything. They don't have to be other players, just have characters that you could recruit. And maybe this is a quest reward as opposed to a consumable I'll never use,
mm-hmm.
you know, is getting an ally if you want it for a boss. If you decide you don't want it, great.
There's precedent for that. Like, you know, getting Solaire's co-op for the end of Dark Souls. That's a quest reward.
Yeah, you do the quest right, and it's hard to do it right. It's mm-hmm. it's esoteric, it's difficult, and then you have an ally if you want it. I think that would have been way cooler than just not doing that. And here they kind of hint at it.
Yeah,
you know. So in this the water, there's a samurai named Nagami Gensai,
mm-hmm.
Who's staying in the pond looking at the bandits, and he says, "Oh, you're a shinobi. Let's go in and take these guys out."
Yeah. He doesn't really make it an option. He immediately goes and he pulls a Gyobu. Hear me, my name is Nogami Gensai.
Yeah, a lot of people yell their name before they die.
It's pretty good.
This game. I'm looking forward to when I die so I can yell my name beforehand. Yeah. This is the absolute wrong way to do it, though.
Yeah.
You want to clear out these minis because it's an early Sekiro boss, you know, mini boss fight.
Yeah. You know, so you can sneak around to the left through this building and deal with a few who are not necessarily apparent as you're mm-hmm. surveying the scene, which is good. And my opening gambit for the main group of baddies is to stealth one of the shield guys. That's kind of like right to the side of Juzo himself.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about when Juzo aggroes is he doesn't immediately like rush you.
Yeah. He has to get up.
Yeah. He's a little bit slow. So if you leave one or two guys,
mm-hmm.
You can take them out.
Yeah.
You know, not too bad.
Yeah. And then you want to go and talk to Nogami because mm-hmm. because then he will come in. If you activate Nogami, he will run in and he will probably die fighting the ads as opposed to doing what you want him to do, which is distract Juzo so you can attack him from behind.
Yep. There's almost no probably about it.
Yeah.
Like he is not set up for this.
Right. I mean, even succeeding, Nogami died right before Juzo went down.
Yeah.
Like there is dialogue for when he lives. That's, you know, par for the course. But Nogami, he is helpful, but he is not necessarily the most durable.
Yeah. And if you haven't been able to keep him alive, don't think that you're missing out on too much with that dialogue. There's not a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience of this was meticulously clearing these ads over and over and over, which was very frustrating. The boss itself I found a lot easier than Shinobi Hunter. Like, it only took me a couple tries on this guy, mm-hmm. and I actually really like this class of enemy.
Yeah.
And these dudes are a blast to fight.
they pop up a couple of times, and all of them kind of have, they end up having, correct me if I'm wrong, they have the gourd of sake as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a drunkard and a glutton.
Yeah.
That you'll run into. So it is a good time to fight fat guys. So his whole thing, once we actually, so this is Lord Juzo. He's kind of king of these bandits. Like, he runs this bandit group.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be this famous sumo wrestler, but he got drunk and disgraced himself, and now he has to make a living however he can, which is by, you know, sacking villages and stealing.
Brigandry.
Brigandry. General brigandry. So he has this huge curved sword and a gourd of sake with him that he will do a couple things with.
Mm-hmm.
He will drink it, and that allows him to do two moves. He can either buff his sword.
Mm-hmm.
So his sword does poison damage, and it will poison you through blocks, but not reflex.
Right.
So that can be very difficult to kind of sit there and just let him wail on you.
Mm-hmm.
He can also spray it out in a kind of a wide arc of making a poison mist.
Yeah.
Which is a huge gift, because whenever he drinks or does one of those things, run behind him and get in some hits.
Wide open.
Yeah, wide open. And like, I think these guys are actually on the Sekiro curve fairly easy.
They're slow, right?
Yeah, they're super slow. If you've internalized your mobility, these guys are super not a big deal.
Yeah,
the only thing that makes this guy kind of suck is being surrounded by all those dudes.
Mm-hmm.
The second one we run into later is also surrounded by ads, but they're quicker to take out.
Yeah,
at the very least. But I would rather just have a duel.
Yeah,
with this dude.
This is also a pretty big it relies heavily on grabs as well. So what he'll do is he'll kind of grab you by the collar and throw you down. Then he'll do a stomp. You haven't necessarily had that many opportunities to deal with grabs since the chained ogre. So if you didn't like get that down pat, like if you either cheesed the chained ogre, or, you know, if you just kind of found a way around learning to deal with it, that can get you here as well. More often than not, when he would do that to me, I would be left with just a sliver of health. So I could get away. I can't remember how many prayer necklaces I had when I did this. So
yeah,
your mileage
likely
may vary.
One.
Yeah,
likely one or zero.
Yeah.
Right. Like, depending on where you're there, unless you got further in the roof.
Yep.
I think you might be able to technically. I mean, you can do this. This area is optional. We should have mentioned that earlier, right?
No. Oh, yeah.
This area is technically optional, so you could have the entire games behind you, but you're unlikely to.
Right.
Probably gonna go here sooner than that. That grab is pretty nasty. A lot of things, like a couple of people, when I've said like something one shots you in this game, they'd be like, it doesn't one shot you. It leaves you with 1% health or whatever. It's like, well,
I'm not touching you.
Exactly. Like, if you're topped off, yes, it doesn't one shot you, but it's very hard to stay topped off in this game because mm-hmm. your Estus is so garbage.
Yep.
You know, and you don't have very much of it.
Yeah.
So the grab is the big thing to avoid. If he's hitting you with your sword, you can deflect. They're really slow windups,
mm-hmm.
which, weirdly enough, and there's a boss that actually does this stuff really well later, but that whole idea, similar to the Dancer of the Boreal Valley,
yeah.
where something being slow can make it hard just as much as something being quick.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. He does kind of that stuff. So watching out for those grabs, watching out for those sword sweeps, and mm-hmm. really trying to bait him into drinking.
so I don't know, like, making sure he has a stressful day at work.
Yeah, it's the world end.
Kinda.
You have a former alcoholic friend who you immorally try to get drinking, and it's played for laughs and celebration because that movie lacks a moral core.
I will fight you.
Well, just that part. Like, it's this weird, like, fly in the soup, right? Like, the rest of it is pretty good, but why is that played as fun?
Yeah.
I hate that so much.
Yeah, okay.
Sitting in the movie and I'm like, what an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, what a terrible person this is. How am I supposed to believe in any stakes in this movie?
Yeah.
What an asshole. He manslaughtered somebody. That's why he stopped drinking. And you're just like, have a drink, brother. Like, and everyone, you know, and it's like, oh, and that's how they win? Great. Good fucking job.
Good moral.
You know, yeah, good moral.
Yeah.
Manslaughter is good. Drinking is good. Good job. you fucking, like, drop the ball, and like the rest of the movie's good. Spoilers for The World's End. So he actually has a hidden, and I don't know if this is official, this could be an AI, like lots of dice rolls in a row. I think this guy has a secret other kind of phase to him, which I didn't notice until the second run through, but I think at about a quarter health he stops drinking.
Oh.
Which is a good time because cirrhosis and shit.
Well, yeah.
But the he stops and he just starts running after you.
Mm.
Like, it seemed like, you know, my tactic, even when I kind of knew how to fight him, I was still relatively fragile. So I was still, you know, wanted to bait him into those openings.
Yeah.
But he stops doing it and he just kind of runs at you with a slow gait.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to stopping to drink.
Yeah. When I got him that low, I got him on a posture victory. So mm-hmm. I think that I, you know, if he was that low, you know, I didn't see it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that he does that we should probably talk about, something that complicates his regular attacks, it's not just the slow swipes. He will also throw in some sumo moves as well. He does, I don't know the name for the technique, but kind of the palm slam as well, which deploys
the one hand slap.
Maybe
what 1/100th of a E Honda move.
Yep. a fractional Honda. He fractional Honda's here. And he disrupts the rhythm that you might be expecting.
But you can just deflect that. Like, you know, being able to deflect melee attacks is something that you can do. This game, I really came to really like this fight. I just don't like his arena and clearing it out. I'm going to mention, so like, if you clear out all the ads first and then go grab the samurai, what happens is he will kind of switch back and forth between you. Like, you will draw aggro for a little bit, the samurai will hit him, he'll turn around, and you get in your shots. So that makes it a lot easier, actually.
Playing this again, I beat him solo, which felt pretty good.
The later one, there's no ad for when you fight him again. Super fun. So this allows you, so you get unrefined sake for this guy. And we should talk about kind of how sake works in general.
Yes.
In this game, it's a really interesting reward for bosses.
What if dialogue was a consumable item?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you consume the dialogue. Like, you get backstory as a reward. You get and it's pretty clever. Like, you get a drink you can share with NPCs.
And it says that, like, hey, this, you know, sake is a drink for sharing.
Yep. And you can share this with different people throughout your journey. There's three drinking buddies in the game.
Two of them we've met so far.
Yeah. Yep, and we'll meet the other one soon, relatively soon. And they will give you, they'll just kind of shoot the shit with you. That's how you get their backstory. That's how we learn about people. In this game.
Yeah. So at some point, we're going to do kind of an NPC roundup. After some of the entry becomes apparent, and that's where we're going to talk about kind of the implications of these dialogues that you can get.
They'll either be on and off week episode or part of another episode, kind of depending. But we want to do that a little bit later once we've had some more sake. It is a kind of a testament to how pleasurable those scenes are when you're chatting with people. Like, I do wish that Sekiro had a bigger cast of interesting characters, like specifically in the bosses, but the characters that are there are interesting enough to where, like, I was always glad to find sake. You know, it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I'm going to go bring this back to whoever my particular person I'm working on is and feed them the sake. So now we can get into the estate itself. Into this audience chamber and into the panic room.
Into the hidden temple of which you have heard legends. The main building, there's not so much here. You got a couple of items you can get, and there are some easy to stealth enemies. Mostly, though, you're going to notice the idol and the NPCs nearby.
Well, and there's a the first fog wall of the game, the first hidden chamber wall here. Off to your left, there is a just a slat of wall without an outline on it, just a slat of wall that if you press your back against it, you will knock on it and go to a little hidden chamber with treasure in it, including a prayer bead.
I didn't know one was here.
It's actually, like, I don't know how to feel about it, because later they bring these up and they say when there's the outline of a person, this one there's no outline. So is the idea that I just, like, go and do this to every one of these in the world?
Do I have to be a reverse Roomba?
Am I playing this like Wolfenstein? Like Wolfenstein 3D, where I'm just going and doing this to every single wall in the game? I don't think I like that this breaks the rules. The only reason why I know about it, I didn't see it, is because I was struggling on a boss and I looked up a guide of where all the prayer beads I might have missed were. I'm like, I need all the help I can get. So fuck it. It's either a prayer. I can't remember if it's a prayer bead or a gourd seed. It's something. It's a high level treasure.
Yahtzee either way.
Yahtzee either way. And some others, you know, some candy and some clown supplies. That you can get there as well. So they're hidden clown stash.
just a spray painted Geo Metro clown supplies.
So that's the big thing you can take here. Other than just like, this is just like a little refractory period, right? Like. You're not really supposed to be having a challenge here. It's just right before the boss.
And what a boss.
Before we get into that, we run into a couple NPCs.
Yes.
We run into Inosuke's mom, who we got the bell from. Mm-hmm. And she recognizes you as the son of the owl and says, "I saw a dreadful vision. It was pouring out more and more. It wouldn't stop, wouldn't stop."
Seems accurate.
seems accurate. Sent her son to go rescue Kuro. When we see him, he is wounded outside of this chamber and his eyes are bleeding.
Yeah. Inosuke can't catch a break.
Yeah. Yep. If you recall, in the future, he was wearing bandages over his eyes.
Yes.
Here we get to see the origins of those that bleeding.
Yeah. He was trying to save Kuro and he says, "Hey, do not go in there."
Not go in there. It's a real Ace Ventura moment.
Yep. Well, I mean, he says it with his butt. So
yeah, exactly. It's pretty weird.
Yeah.
A weird tonal shift.
but he warns you about dreadful illusion techniques, saying, "Hey, without a snap seed, it can't be overcome. If we have gone to the valley with the white snake, with a great serpent, we have already gotten some of these." He hands you a kind of a free sample pack of them, though.
Yeah. Or just one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Like you just get one snap seed from him.
One is a sample.
one is a sample. I don't know if it's a pack.
Yes.
So you get a snap seed here, which to me, like, this is, I've talked about this a couple times. Like, I thought, okay, that's the trick to this boss fight.
Nope.
It's not. All the times I've been successful, I ignored this mechanic entirely. Snap seeds are useful, but for like later bosses, they do not suggest that you would need snap seeds for them.
Right.
It's just really weird to me. And if I did, it wouldn't be better if I did need the snap seed, right? Because then I would be like, well, I have one of these and I can't buy them.
Right.
Well, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives it this sense of scarcity. Like, I have one of these and it's good for the boss. Like, if I used it and beat the boss on the first try, Yahtzee.
Yeah.
If not, though, now I am, it's like a poor get poorer.
Yeah. It made me real anxious.
Yeah. Me too. Like, and I don't think in a way that's like, oh, this is intentional. Like, here's some anxiety for you to get you pumped. Like, I don't feel like that was what was going on. I just feel like it's, you know, a way to hint that you can use snap seeds for a thing and introduce the snap seed mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, like, if you got more than one, or if you could then buy them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
the other answer is if you come here way later in the game.
When you have a few of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or you can buy them. What if you gave the snap seed to the merchant and in the future he has them?
Oh, it's like, hey, go find me a bunch of these. That's
yeah,
really
exactly.
Good.
Like, yeah, literally, like, I spent a lot of time thinking of different ways of this game. Like, I enjoy this game a lot. I think that there are things I just really wish were a little bit different. And this is one of them. And this is all moot because you don't need them.
Right.
But if you did need them, it would be really cool if you were, exactly, go find me a bunch of these.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you know, you don't know me yet, but you will. if you find these things, I will buy them from you.
Yeah. You're the person who, like, suggests that he becomes a vendor.
Yeah. That would be super cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I don't know. As is, though, ignore this.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then go downward into, you need a key. You move this tatami mat, which is a Japanese for mat. And then you, that's not what it is. You move this mat out of the way and go downstairs into the panic room, into the hidden temple. It's on fire as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge statue at the end. And then for some reason, the perspective made Kuro look like he was 1 foot tall to me.
Yeah.
Like he was a little doll or something. Like, who's this little guy?
But somebody shrank him.
Yeah.
Like, Kuro's been downsized.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I told you there's no such thing as a shrinkulator.
Yeah, well, maybe back in the past.
There's a debigulator.
Yeah. Maybe it's different in, you know, in the ancient times.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked like he was real little, and I was like, "Who's this little guy? Mm-hmm. Like, am I gonna fight a doll?"
Yeah,
you know, because he said her illusions were bad, so I was like, "Oh, this is, she made a tiny little Calcabrina version of Kuro for me to fight or something."
I thought this was cool. I thought that it made him, I mean, especially because he was overwhelmed. Like, it played up his vulnerability in the situation, which was good.
He's very vulnerable.
Yeah,
during it. Yeah. So you rush to him, of course, and he goes, "Father, mother. The butterflies, everyone is gone." So he's having a rough day.
Yeah. And he doesn't recognize you. Like when you say, "Hey, you need to get out of here as quickly as possible." He's like, who are you? And while you're having this exchange, who steps out but Lady Butterfly herself?
We'll be right back.
Yes. So you send Kuro off to a corner, you know, for the fight. We're introduced to our second major boss fight, Lady Butterfly.
I love this boss fight, Gary.
Yeah.
This is really good.
I was stuck here for a long time.
Yeah.
The only, like, there's a minor nitpick I have, but for the most part, I think this is super good.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, thematically, the idea that you're fighting just a badass old woman who can serve you your own butt on a platter.
Yeah.
Thumbs up on that.
And the reason, you know, the narrative why, like, so she's your teacher.
Yeah.
Like, she is somebody who taught you part of your technique. So she was enlisted by Owl.
Right.
To teach you the ways of the shinobi.
Mm-hmm. And there were, like, other people. Like, the reason that you are kind of different is because you trained under all of these different masters under different different disciplines. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Lady Butterfly is one of them. And she alludes to your past. Like, she talks about, like, oh, you know, some son of Owl. It even talks about, like, yeah, you've gotten stronger, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll talk about a little bit more of the lore after we talk about the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And this, when she pops up, you get a little tutorial that explains the relationship between vitality and posture.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is some enemies will recover posture too quickly. You need to knock down their vitality.
Right.
Before they can do that. That is only like kind of half true of her.
Mm-hmm.
If you're very aggressive, you can do just a straight up posture victory on her.
Yeah.
She's really quick. She's kind of built to discourage that until you know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you're going to be trying to get in those hits to remove her vitality.
Yes. Yeah. So she's very fast, very aggressive, getting the rhythm down to deflect her attacks. You know, so she attacks with these kind of like needle like kukri. And she goes very, very quickly. Deflecting those feels good. Like I felt like a rock star when that happened. And there's some delayed hits that happen here. And she will either do a big attack and jump back and throw her kukri herself, or she will jump around to these steel wires that are around. Yeah.
Yep, doing with this kind of wire foo stuff. The cool thing is, too, this is the boss fight that mostly a couple other boss fights use it as well, but use your shuriken as a thing, because if you knock her out of the air, you do pretty good posture damage.
Yeah, the timing on that is really satisfying, because if you hit her while she's standing on the wire, she'll deflect it. So you have to be like real quick with deploying it so you can knock her out. And it's basically like a critical hit. It does a ton of posture damage to her.
Yep. And knocks her on her back so you can run up and get a couple more hits.
Yeah.
First phase, you know, definitely doable. Like I felt very stuck on this for a while because I tried this a lot before Gyobo.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately getting the vitality increase and the attack increase is what made the difference for me.
Yeah.
Initially, super, super tricky. Those are all, you know, those are her moves in the first phase. Like it's all pretty reasonable to do that. But of course she has multiple phases here. When you hit her for the second phase, she disappears and goes up to the top of the statue.
I'll be up here for a while, she says.
And summons these phantom minions, which are just weird, like ghostly farmers and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know who these guys are supposed to be in the lore or what have you, like what this is supposed to represent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at first I thought they would be like people you killed, because there is this kind of regret theming that goes on in this game.
Yeah.
But they don't look like that. And this is where you can use the snap seed. The trick is the snap seed has a really kind of short radius.
Yeah.
It will dispel these illusions, but only the ones that are close to you.
Right. It may still be beneficial to do that, because when this little phase of the fight is over, they only stick around for a while. She will jump down and she turns them into kind of these butterfly motes that will chase you down and then explode when they hit.
And that's her big second phase thing. And it's the one thing I don't like about this phase of the fight is that a couple of the times when I first got to it, she had done this like more or less off camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just got one shot by something off camera.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really know what she was doing. I'm engaging with her, but she had already set the butterflies loose. And nobody suspects the butterflies.
Yeah.
So I was just getting – they do a lot of damage. And if it's the whole group, like, you can't survive it.
Right.
So that is a little bit frustrating to me. I just wish that, you know, I don't like being one shot in games. Mm-hmm. And no, I didn't have 90% health. Actually got one shot from full health. Thank you.
Not technically a one shot. Sorry. I can't get the right tone. I need to push my glasses up my nose here. No.
99% of a one shot. It was actually a one shot, which that's the one thing I don't really like about this.
Yeah.
The way the butterflies factor into her regular attacks, I do like, though, where like some of her attacks will just spawn a couple of them. And they have this really interesting delay. Like, they'll float next to her and then charge in on you. And you can block them. They don't, like, knock you. You know, it's not an explosion. But it just changes your blocking rhythm ever so slightly in a way that's, like, pretty satisfying.
Yeah.
Those are the two differences, though, is that sometimes she'll take a break and summon some dudes.
Yeah.
And sometimes she will, come down and summon those little butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
But it is once you know this is a really great phase relationship.
Yeah.
Between the two, something that Sekiro does well most of the time, I think, is have a phase where it does play off the first phase well.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always happen. Happens really well here, where like for the most part they're the same attacks with some extra butterflies that make things a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
So pretty neat.
Yeah, I like this boss fight a lot. Really satisfying, different than the stuff that we've done before. And a really good wall to get over, I think.
Yep.
Just based on how nimble she is.
Very nimble. It's like the quick boss.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't had for a little while. Very easy. There are lots of cheesing options.
Yeah.
For this boss. If you strike and then step to your right, you can do that for the entire fight. and there's also, the Nightjar slash, which if you just spam that, she can never hit you. You can stun lock her for the entire game.
I watched for the entire game. Just while you're going around Ashina Castle, down in the valley.
She floats in front of you. She floats. She's over she's superimposed over the ending cutscene where you're just slashing her over and over.
Yeah. I watched a video of that, and it's ridiculous. I expected that to be patched out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting what they've patched out as far as cheese goes, right?
Yeah.
Like they did that patch recently, and they did patch out there are some bosses that you are not supposed to get deathblow attacks on.
Mm-hmm.
That you can kind of trick. They patched those out, one of which I'm really bummed out because it's a three phase boss, and having that deathblow in the second phase felt clever to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, okay, this is cool that I can do this. It doesn't feel like a cheat. But they patched that out. They didn't patch out stuff like this, where it's like if you do a move over and over, or if you spam firecrackers or ash, they didn't spam that or patch that out.
Yeah.
So it's I don't know if they eventually will. I hope they don't, right? Like people who want to actually do the fight can just do the fight.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of these people being susceptible to certain techniques like that, it's one of the very few like actual nods to that kill ingeniously thing.
Right.
You know, like I figure out the combination for this that obviates this boss is not like I don't think that's something to be avoided.
No,
I don't know that FromSoft agrees with me, but I think that's actually a strength.
Yeah,
you know, it's always going to be optional, you know, but just having that thing like, oh, I figured out a trick.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a good feeling, not a bad feeling.
Yeah,
you know, so at least in my opinion, and I know that like it's like okay, if I'm doing this and it doesn't feel good, if I don't like doing it, I can stop.
Yeah,
you know, so but I'm not swayed by the temptation would destroy me. argument. I think that is bunk.
Yeah.
So
it's not persuasive.
Yeah. Not persuasive to me at the very least.
Yeah.
So as she dies, she says, you've gotten stronger, Wolf. Let's talk about real quick before we talk about what happens, what this person's doing here and why they're doing it.
Yeah, because why would somebody who trained you, somebody who was allied with Owl, be killing you?
Yeah. Foreshadowing, right? Because as we'll find out throughout the game, Owl is not Father of the Year.
No.
By any means, no matter what his mug says.
You mean somebody who recruited a child soldier isn't necessarily on the up and up?
Yeah, somebody's been playing their Kojima games. So he's not necessarily a good guy. So this is the first like really pretty good, you know, hinting of this in game, you know, outside of the cutscene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's likely what's happening
right
here. Is she was not here with her or anything like that. She was also here to do harm to Little Man. She's probably killed his parents, right? Like he says, oh, the butterflies, mom and dad are gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is part of this kind of this process, not just to, they don't want to kill Kuro, but they do need to isolate him.
Right.
So like killing his parents and killing you is very important, because if they're going to do what they want to do with Kuro, he needs to feel alone.
Right.
And that's kind of one of the kind of things with his character. And she is part of that.
Yeah.
I had no idea the first time I played it. I was just like, oh, okay, there's just another person who wants to hit me with a sword. Like, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I actually think this is really kind of subtly done and well done.
Yeah. No. Especially in hindsight, once you get kind of the reveals about who is the mover and shaker behind this.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, great little fight. You know, just for now, you know, there's a major reveal, which we don't want to spoil just yet, but like the spoiler walls are basically off. We're just going to be dancing with it a little bit more. Yeah, I guess I don't want to say what actually ends this thing yet. I mean, should we? I don't know. It's weird. If you are playing along with the show, you know, you don't want to hear this next bit.
Okay.
So we'll just say that. Sorry about that. And just know that we're picking up the pace a little bit.
Yeah.
So she drops her memory. That's how we learn that she trained us. And a Sakura droplet, which gives us an additional resurrection token, but we have to cash it in.
Right.
But as this fight caused the statue to fall over, and as you're kind of distracted by this, you get stabbed in the back.
Right. You're not shown who just yet.
Yes. But you can probably put together the clues based on what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
You know, this is somebody very close to you.
Right.
Who's betrayed you.
Yeah. And so like, as you fall down, you see
that's right. It's Kuro. It turns back. He's barely gripping the sword. He's tied it to his back and charged you like a rhino. Because it's the only way he could do it.
So you got to get a running start.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Owl. It's Owl who does it.
Yeah. It's a different cute creature. I read a thing the other day.
Yeah.
That was about, you know, this animal expert was talking about unicorns. And if unicorns are real, they would definitely be aggressive assholes because of that horn placement. That's only reason why a creature has a horn there is they're like rhinos. They're you know, nature's dickheads.
Yeah.
Like literally. So if they're unicorns, they would not be this peaceful, like virgin loving forest creatures. They would do this to you.
Yeah. They would be a real cranky virgin loving forest dwellers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reluctant. So Owl will stab you in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't know that yet, but we will know it in the future. He faked that whole monologue.
Yeah, yeah.
Out in the courtyard.
Seemed very pat up there, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Like, you know, he we're talking about people trying to isolate and manipulate Kuro. He is one of the such agents.
Yes. So. Yeah. Wolf falls down and the beams start to come down above him. Things go black and you think you're going to wake up in the modern day. You know, how did I survive that? After a little blackout, it comes back. Kuro lifts a piece of debris off of you and says, "Hey, you fought bravely on my behalf. I cannot throw away that loyalty. Loyal Wolf, take my blood and live again."
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the origin of you getting the blood, you know?
So it answers the question, you know, what happened between then and now? Why do I have this ability that is normally only associated with the royal line, with the dragon's blood, right?
And now you have it. And then we wake up back in the present after this. A couple of things actually happen while you're gone.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So a shrine actually gets put up here, or a little a statue is put here that you don't get to see because you get teleported out.
Right.
Also, the peddler goes and sneaks something off of the corpse of Lady Butterfly, which he sells you in the future. We've seen this in the future, but we didn't really know what it was.
Oh, what is it?
The Phantom of Kunai.
Oh, shit. Yeah. No, that's where you first read the name Lady Butterfly.
Yep. So he presumably went and scavenged this from her corpse. And that's why he sells you that. That is a thing that you need to upgrade your shurikens to eventually let you also shoot butterflies.
Oh yeah.
Yep. So those are the things that happen while you're gone, but we are back in the future now.
Yeah.
We've gone back in time. And we are ready to take Ashina Castle.
Yes, we are. So that's going to be the next episode. So we're past the spoiler wall, right?
Yeah. So just know that we're going to be talking about the motivations and stuff of Rufio.
Yes.
Mostly he was jealous of Pam. Yeah. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thank you,
everybody.
And thank you for your support.
Thank you for your support. Next episode is coming in a week as we're starting the off week episodes,
mm-hmm.
Where we will be talking, we'll be reading your responses. Yeah. It is too late at the time you're hearing this just because of how recording happened. Apologies for that, but know there'll be another opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. So listen for that. That'll be the first appendix that we put out. And we're going to continue that at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So, I think that's about it. Or at least, through, when you say foreseeable, at least through Sekiro.
Yes.
Right. When we eventually start talking about, the Surge.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to do a special report on nanomachines or whatever the fuck that game's about. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see.
People like that game.
No, I'm really looking forward to playing it, actually. Yeah. After Immortal Unchained. Immortal Unchained has a DLC as well that's coming out very soon that I would like to play.
Comes out later this month, right? Or June?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm not going to pick it up right then, but I might pick it up, after we get through this.
Yeah.
So, and I imagine we'll probably cover that.
Mm-hmm.
Because as the small but loyal group of Immortal Unchained defenders online.
Yep. I've logged on.
Yeah, we have all logged on. So until next time you log on.
Until next time you log on, remember, the master is absolute.
Umbasa.
Umbasa.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.